views and commentaries are for entertainment only. The views and opinions expressed therein are those of the individual speakers and callers and do not necessarily represent the views of KFAR Radio or any of our respective employees, affiliates, or sponsors of this program.
Good morning, Fairbanks, and welcome to listening to KFAR Radio Problem Corner. We're at 660 on the AM dial, 97.5 on the FM dial, and we live stream at KFARradio.com. I'm David Prues, host of Problem Corner. It's a Wednesday. It's history in the purple padded room. I have Libby Dalton Slain, Nick Nugent, and Nick, introduce our continuation of your guest.
Well, Dave, this is going to be a good day. When Libby came last time, we
encore.
And we absolutely didn't have enough time in an hour for the what she's got to tell us, so we're glad to have you back.
Do we have enough time in an hour or all week?
I hope so.
That could be true.
Libby, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you.
I don't see any Rugrats with you.
No, I made a executive decision.
Which a grandmother decision.
Yeah, executive to leave them at home another day.
Okay. Now, your father is one of the most interesting pioneers that the interior, if not Alaska, comes across, what I believe is in the present generation, someone whose people have lived to meet this gentleman. And we had a great time in April going through a large portion of it, but it's what I call scratching the surface. There's an exceptional road named after your dad, but there's a whole area that is now bringing mineral development into Alaska because of your father.
Correct. He spent his entire adult working career on and off the North Slope of Alaska and was considered an expert in construction, engineering, transportation. And yes, he made very, very valuable finds and discoveries and did very valuable work for Alaska and the country.
What were some of the discoveries and finds that he was associated with?
Well, let me tell you when it all started. He, lifelong Alaskan, grew up in Cordova till 1919. The family relocated to Washington State, educated parochial schools, 1 year preparatory school in California, and then on to the University of Washington to study engineering. And he always wanted to get back to Alaska, so he transferred to the University of Alaska, which was known back in the beginning as the Alaska Agriculture and School of Mines in Fairbanks. He graduated there in 1937 with his mining degree, and he worked in the mining industry in interior Alaska. It involved mapping, surveying, drilling, mining of gold placer deposits, and he worked for the Fairbanks Exploration Company, Gold Placers, Inc., American Creek Operating Company, Boundary Dredging Company, among others. He became skilled there. That was his start in constructing roads and camps and excelled at winter freighting of equipment and supplies. So the war came along and the U.S. became involved in World War II. He joined the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers in Fairbanks. He enlisted in the U.S. Navy Seabees in 1943 with hopes of being sent or assigned to the PET 4 operation on the slope. The National Petroleum Reserve Number 4 was set aside in 1923 by President Harding to have as a stockpile of hopefully oil, gas, and other important minerals that our country would need. The government contracted with, well, they had their Navy's construction battalion in charge. Later, it went to the Department of Defense, but at the beginning, it was the Navy's construction battalion, the Seabees, that was assigned to explore and map out PET4. He really wanted to get up there, but he got dispatched to Dutch Harbor in 1944 and 45, and then on to Oahu to help rebuild Pearl Harbor. When he separated from the Navy in 1946, he knew exactly where he belonged, back in Fairbanks, and back with the Seabees to help with the exploration in PET4.
Okay. Describe where PET4 is.
It's the whole western portion of, it goes from the Arctic coast, a little bit east of Barrow to the Brooks Range. It's a 23 million
acre
parcel of land. And the history of petroleum reserves, if I recall, there were three of them. One or two in California, one in Wyoming, and then number four in Alaska. But it's changed. If you were to Google National Petroleum Reserve number four, it'd be the
now it's number one.
Yeah, maybe.
Only a government. Well, yeah, we go from PET 4 to NPR 1.
Yep.
Well, I kind of like the piece of the story. So your dad said, I'd like to go to PET 4, and some Navy assignment guy heard that as Pearl Harbor.
Yeah. I don't know. Could have happened. But he was real anxious. He knew. He'd spent, 5, 6 years dinging around in the interior doing the gold chasing, and they knew what was going on up there, or what was projected to go on up there, and he wanted to be a part of it. And he did get a chance. He applied and was immediately sent to Umiat as a foreman, a camp foreman, and he just rose up the ranks to engineering supervisor in the office, and then on up to assistant superintendent up in Barrow, and then superintendent of Arctic Contractors in Point Barrow. Yep.
So when he was moving up, was he away most of that time then? Did that keep him up there? Yeah.
Oh, yes. Every winter. That's when they got their work done. Yep, and they prepared for it in the off season, the planning, the supplies, the material, the labor, the barges. Everything had to be sea lifted from the West Coast.
And you
to
didn't
Point Barrow.
You didn't have a big camp every so often that served filet mignon on Sundays.
No, not that fancy, but they did build a camp. It was row after row of Quonset huts. They did build a runway. They had a cook. They tried to make a life for the crew up there. The higher ups, the supervisors, and some of the scientific crews were allowed to bring their wives. And so my dad got hooked. And on 1949, Kathleen Fitzpatrick came to town, and she had a couple degrees from Northern Arizona University, and one of them was in English. And so she assumed she could get a job at a newspaper, and she applied, and she was turned down. And they said, Kathleen, you just don't have enough experience. So she got a job with Arctic Contractors in the office. And that's when my dad was there working as one of the main engineers.
So her getting turned down is a cause of your birth.
Yep. In a way. And her coming to Alaska because of the Arizona heat.
There you go.
Is the cause of
We're connecting our dots life here, Fairbanks. We're connecting dots.
Yeah. So they got married, fell in love first, got married in Barrow, 1950. They even took a honeymoon. I have some marvelous pictures of them driving the Alcan from Fairbanks to Arizona. She wanted to show him the Grand Canyon and the beautiful Arizona countryside.
Fairbanks, we're going to take a commercial break. You're listening to KFAR Radio. I have Libby Dalton and Nick Nugent in the studio here. We'll be back after these messages.
More Problem Corner is coming up on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
Fish on! The Valdez Fishing Report is brought to you by Frontier Outfitters. Drop in and explore their extensive fishing department. Rods to reels, lures to lines. You'll see fresh and saltwater, as well as fly fishing tackle for every game fish in Alaska. Stock up on supplies for your Alaska-sized summer of fun. Coolers to camping gear. Frontier Outfitters is your first stop to making your next outdoor adventure a success. Your store for the outdoors. Frontier Outfitters, for your Alaskan lifestyle.
It's time for the Valdez Fishing Report. Interviews, derby standings, tips, and advice for Prince William Sound. Lori Prox here with an update following the Valdez Women's Silver Salmon Derby. Cheryl Wagner of Copper Center said she came down to Valdez a day early to find out where the silvers were before competing in the Women's Derby. Wagner did a lot more than scout for fish. She found a whopper of a fish Friday that put her solidly in first place in the regular Valdez Silver Salmon Derby. Wagner's fish weighed in at 16.02 pounds and could win her $10,000 if it stays in first place through the end of the Derby, September 6th. Wagner's fish is the largest one caught in the Valdez Silver Salmon Derby since 2018, when Axel Hutchinson brought in a 17.28 pound salmon. Wagner won a first place daily prize in the Derby and could win some serious money, but she caught it too early to become the queen of the Silver Salmon Sisterhood. That title belongs to Tiffany Wells of Valdez, who caught a 14.98 pound silver on Saturday. Wells lives in Valdez, and she and her husband took the Coast Guard morale boat out with some friends Saturday. They fished all day out at Goose Point, and she got her 14.98 pound fish, weighed in just 6 minutes before the Women's Derby weigh-in closed. There were a lot of fish out at Goose Point. Elena Oldani of Valdez reeled in a 14.84 pounder for second place. Barb Lyons of Valdez was third with a 14.24 pounder.
Coming to Valdez? Stay at Valdez RV Park. These TripAdvisor reviews tell you all you need to know.
Each site was clearly labeled, ground was graded well, and it's so close to the harbor.
Owners are friendly and accommodating, and the laundry, shower, and bathrooms were very clean. They even had s'mores at the fire pit.
Visit ValdezRVPark.com today.
KVAK's Valdez Fishing Report. Fish Valdez and reel in a big one.
KFAR Weather.
Sunshine mixed with clouds at times today, with daytime highs approaching 79. Southeasterly winds around 5 miles an hour. Partly cloudy tonight, lows level off around 55. Overcast skies tomorrow, high of 80. And that's your weather on KFAR 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Derek Height.
And now, more Problem Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
Fairbanks, welcome back. I have Libby Dalton-Slain in the studio with me here, and Nick Nugent. How you all doing?
Real good.
Now, you said now you're going to get into some interesting things about your father.
Right, right. Arctic Contractors disbanded in September of 1953. They had a 10-year, well, the Navy had a 10-year period from 43 to 53, and they suspended their operations. And my dad really felt that more had to be done to develop Alaska's natural resources. He knew what was up there, and so he wanted to do something about it. He applied for and was appointed to the Alaska Development Board, and they appointed him manager of the rail belt office here in Fairbanks. He, in 1953 and 1954, he wrote several reports and promotional papers articulating the feasibility of local resource development, including the use of a natural gas line from the Arctic as a source for structural heat and power along the rail belt. He really pushed for this. And what was probably Jim Dalton's most valuable contribution to our state was his leading role in the promotion of his Gubik report. Gubik was a gas field south of Barrow, and it contained a lot of gas. They discovered, I don't have the figures in front of me, but in the millions of, estimated in the millions of cubic feet of gas in Gubik. And so he used that information that he had obtained. He was involved in discovering that gas field, so he knew everything about it, and he used that information to write his Gubik report. Gubik gas field was located just south of the Prudhoe Bay discovery well. And again, tests showed it was just loaded with natural gas. When the Navy established Petroleum Reserve Number 4, PET 4, it consisted of 23 million acres, and it was withdrawn from development by the government. They knew from Arctic contractor work, they went outside of the boundaries a bit, and that's where they found Gubik, and they knew oil and gas deposits were located near the eastern border of the Naval Reserve and a bit beyond. So the federal government withdrew an additional 20 million acres known as Public Land Order Number 82, which encompassed the Gubik field, and making that proven gas-bearing area, like all of PET 4, unavailable for commercial leasing and development. He was convinced Gubik gas could provide a reliable source and economic source of natural gas along the railboat, and that a small diameter pipeline could be built and was feasible. He decided to see what he could do to get development started. That's when he got real interested and got on the Alaska Development Board. He felt that a detailed documented report on feasibility of developing Northern Alaska Petroleum would carry much more weight when issued by a government agency than would be if it was privately published. So he wrote his report, and it was published June 30th, 1954. It's an 80-page book, accepted as an official publication of the Alaska Development Board, Territory of Alaska.
So your father was very involved by what he had seen in getting people's attention to start to shift to the east, which is where Prudhoe and some of the very best of the oil fields were located.
Yep, he knew there was oil and gas, and he wanted to see what he could do to open it up for development. Well, the Gubik report, and, you know, I haven't seen it, but I know where it is. The original, and copies, of course, are in the Rasmussen Library Polar Region archives. And so I'm going to make a trip up there soon, or one of these days.
When you do that, give me a call and take me with you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'd really like to see it. I've seen some of his work, and it's extremely technical and well laid out, like an engineer, like like engineers think. So
he's solving problems.
Exactly.
Plus, he had an education at the time that taught you to write well and concisely.
Oh yeah, and he printed. Never saw any cursive writing unless he signed his name to something, and that was barely cursive.
Well, that's typical engineer, first of all.
It is.
Yeah. Well, the feasibility study, the Gubik report, created a considerable interest among oil companies, but that area, the Gubik was located in, and public land order number 82 was all locked up. So over several years, persistent efforts by him and other influential Alaskans to have public land order number 82 revoked succeeded. The Secretary of Interior position changed from a guy named Douglas McKay to William Seaton. I believe it was William. Oh, no, Fred Seaton. And he was under President Eisenhower. And he seemed to have the same outlook as the people in Alaska and my father. He agreed to rescind it. This led to 20 million acres of promising North Slope land for private leasing and drilling. And while his hope for producing Gubik gas and moving it by pipeline to Fairbanks and the railboat never materialized, this newly available additional acreage prompted oil companies to lease, explore, and drill new wells, which led to the Prudhoe Bay discovery in 1967-68. So I think that's his biggest achievement.
Contribution, yeah.
And contribution to the state of Alaska.
I would think so.
Yeah.
You know, maybe when everybody gets their permanent fund check, they should open it up and say, thank you, Jim.
Maybe. Hopefully. Hopefully we get them. So that's the highlight that I wanted to get through today. He finished his working career as an engineering, transportation, and logistics expert in Alaska. His that early Arctic contractor's work in MPR-4 was just invaluable. He conducted numerous overland expeditions that supplied remote areas and staked thousands of miles of winter trails throughout the years from Canada to the Bering Sea and from the Arctic Ocean to the Brooks Range. He constructed ice runways, bridges, built camps, supervised the drilling of oil and gas wells. And he had a good working crew. They kept coming back year after year, the mechanics, the cat trainers. And he enlisted the native people of Barrow. In fact, one of his best friends during his tenure on the slope was Ned Nusinginya of Barrow, who was an expediter for Arctic contractors and kind of the liaison between Point Barrow and the village. Dalton and crew needed good hands, and village supplied them. And it developed into a good relationship. They ended up getting into unions. They ended up getting training, and they were always willing and available to work for the most part to supplement their lifestyle up there. Barrow was tiny. My mom said it was 600 people when she was there in 49 and 50. It was very small. And, they also gave him gas. 1963-64 built them a gas pipeline from the Gubik field that it wasn't Barrow Utilities back in that day, but whoever was in charge, maybe it was BIA, of their heating system. And they've been supplied with gas. It's been updated and modernized over the years, but they've had natural gas since 1964, 1965. Yeah.
That's pretty remarkable. I don't know that very many people know that.
Yeah, it's uncommon. But they use the environment and the resources.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. They knew about the oil seeps, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, along the coast. And maybe they supplemented seal oil in those seal oil lamps with a little bit of crude. I don't know.
Fairbanks, we're going to take a commercial break here. We got some Janet Jackson bumper music. And again, I didn't pick this. Then we have some Fox News, some state news, some commercials, and some weather. And when we come back, Nick Nugent and
Libby.
Miss Dalton Slane will be playing Dave's Lottery, the gubernatorial primary. They're going to pick their choices of who's going to finish 1, 2, 3, and 4. And I know that Mike Dalton will be proud of her daughter's choices.
Absolutely.
We'll be back.
Problem Corner is coming up on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live.
John Zussier, Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley, edging out Wisconsin State Assembly Member Francesca Hong in the state's Democratic primary for governor.
Today, I stand before you filled with gratitude, with humility, and hope as I formally accept the Democratic nomination to be the next governor of the great state of Wisconsin.
Crowley will face Republican Congressman Tom Tiffany in the November general election. The Justice Department says it is charging almost a dozen people for allegedly organizing more than 1,000 fake marriages, mostly to help Chinese nationals gain American citizenship. Here's Attorney General Todd Blanche.
Gaining American citizenship and legal status to reside in this great nation is a sacred privilege, and we will ensure it is always done in accordance with the law protecting our communities and national security.
America is listening to Fox News.
It's time for your Alaska News Minute.
Radio Kenai reports an 18-year-old visiting Alaska was airlifted from the Resurrection Pass Trail near Hope Sunday night after suffering an allergic reaction and having difficulty breathing. According to an Alaska State Trooper dispatch, Soldotna troopers received a text to 911 at about 9:21 p.m. reporting a medical emergency near East Creek Cabin, roughly 14 miles from the trailhead. The 911 messages indicated that an EpiPen had been administered to the patient before rescuers arrived. Because of the teen's condition and the remote location, the Rescue Coordination Center at Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson was contacted and accepted the mission. Rescuers located the patient and successfully airlifted him from the trail before transporting him to medical facilities in Anchorage for further treatment. Troopers identified the patient as 18-year-old Udi Gitao of Georgia. He was visiting Alaska with a group of students from the Georgia Institute of Technology. No additional information about his condition was included in the dispatch.
Streaming live online at KFAR660.com.
You're still glowing, flirting, grooving. You've still got it. But your immune system weakens as you age, making it harder to fight illnesses like pneumococcal pneumonia and RSV. Vaccines are a key part of any health routine and can help protect you from getting really sick. Ask your doctor or pharmacist which vaccines you need. See more at PfizerForAll.com. Sponsored by Pfizer.
Hop in a John Deere Gator XUV for a day's work. Let's see what's on the to-do list. There goes the tree. And the fence.
Help out!
Not a problem. Because you've got a cargo box filled with solutions. Up to 4,000 pounds of towing capacity. And you're ready to roll.
The power's out!
Here we go again. The Gator XUV. Built for every kind of workday. Learn more at johndeere.com/GatorXUV. Nothing runs like a deer.
So what sets Fairbanks Urology apart? For one, on-site labs with same-day results available for most tests. Are you concerned about your appointment day and time? Want to be seen sooner due to worsening symptoms? Well, just ask. Their dedicated triage team will be sure to coordinate care at a time that best supports you. Fairbanks Urology is dedicated to preventative screening, evaluation, and education. Taking care of yourself starts with just one appointment. Fairbanks Urology, corner of Cushman and Gaffney, online at FairbanksUrology.com.
Are you a foster, adoptive, guardianship, or kinship caregiver in Alaska? The Alaska Center for Resource Families is here for you. Whether you're just getting started or need post-adoption support, this statewide resource offers free training, expert guidance, and community of Alaska caregivers. You'll find help with foster parent licensing, ongoing training, and resources for Alaska Native youth and families. Visit acrf.org to learn more. That's acrf.org. Supporting families so every child can thrive.
And now, more Problem Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at KFARradio.com.
Fairbanks, welcome back. Since I have two people in the studio here with me, and My goodness, next Tuesday is the close of the primaries, and we have the primaries available to go in-person voting right now. I'm doing Dave's Lottery for the last 3 weeks, and this is the gubernatorial candidate, August primary candidate on August 18th. And what you do, you two, is in order of placement, first, second, third, and fourth. It's like a lottery. If you've ever been to horse racing, you have the trifecta. This is the quadfecta.
Okay.
Dave's Lottery. So we're going to start with Nick. These are the people I think are going to be in the final consideration, about nine of them. Begich, Bishop, Bronson, Crum, Halala, JKT, Taylor, Walker, and Wilson. So, Nick, who's your number one?
Click Bishop.
Who's your number two?
Boy, I'd have to go with JKT. Seems to be gaining traction.
Who's your number three?
Bernadette.
Who's your number four?
Well, it gets a little more spread out for me, but maybe Treg.
Libby, who's your number one?
Begich.
Who's your number two?
Bernadette.
Who's your number three?
Bronson.
Who's your number four?
Yeah, that's a tough one.
I'm going again, your choices are Begich, Bishop, Bronson, Crum, JKT, Halala, Taylor, Walker, and Wilson.
I'm going to go with JT.
JKT. Okay. I've got you marked. Now, there's a little trail named after your father. Oh, excuse me. That's named after your mom. Nope. There's a whole highway named after your dad.
There you go. There you
How
go.
How is that for knowledge?
Excellent. Excellent, David. So my parents decided they were going to build in Fairbanks and started looking at land prospects. And Jim had graduated from the University of Alaska, well, School of Agriculture and School of Mines, and personally knew Charles Bunnell, the president. So my mom urged him to go talk to him because they wanted to be out of town. Goldstream was out of reach because it was you needed a 6x6 or track vehicle to get there. Chena Ridge was, on the list, but that too was terribly difficult to traverse. And so north of the university, turns out Bunnell owned a lot of property. And it was much more accessible. And so she asked my dad to go talk to him. And he said, oh, God, no, I can't do that. My dad was, terribly shy. Not terribly shy, but he was not an outgoing person. Very quiet and humble. Quiet and polite. And he said, I can't do that. And she said, okay, well, I will. And so she marched down there and made an appointment and talked to him and said, hey, I'm Jim Dalton's wife, and we want to build, and we would be interested in some property if you'd sell some to us. And he said, you're Jim Dalton's wife? You just go pick out whatever you want. And they did. And they picked up 38 acres off Yankovich Road. That area was heavily in agriculture. Belaine farmed off Farmer's Loop. And what is now Goldstream Road, and Mike Yankovich farmed potatoes. And my dad, being the engineer, could easily walk down Yankovich Road, which was a dirt road, and go by section line. And he picked the best place Yankovich had to offer at the highest point where he could get a view of the Alaska Range, south-facing and easy slope. And for years, they called that the section line road.
Yeah.
It was just a section line. It wasn't a road.
A section line easement on each side of that section line. Yep. There's 60 feet of available easement access.
Mm-hmm.
Simple as that.
Yep. So access, he went and staked it.
And I've got something for you. What was the original name of Yankovic Road? Who's it named after?
Mike Yankovic.
Wrong.
Okay.
Jankovic.
Jankovic?
Yeah. J, not a Y.
Really?
Yes. I have a map that shows all the sections and everything. It's a 1951 school district map. And it shows every piece of property, around this area. And they're showing all the properties down that road. There was not a road at the time. And it was 160, it was a quarter of a section, 168 acres. Jankovic. J-A-N-K, capital O-V-I-C-H.
Really?
Yeah. I'll take a photo of it and I'll send it to you tonight.
Yes, I'd love that.
Yeah.
Well, Jim McGoffin bought 160-acre parcel to the west of the section line, and my father went up to the appropriate level where he could make sure he was at the summit to get a view. Maybe not the summit, but in practicality, where he could get a good view of the Alaska Range.
Yeah.
And so he staked it out, filed it, and purchased it. And I have the original deed and the original legal description, which has changed over the years, of course.
That was a meets and bounds.
Yeah, yes. So access was actually, he went up what is now Chattanooga. The Hegdahls had a horse farm there. And he asked if he could use their road and cut a path through up to his property before he could build one, and they said yes.
Didn't the Lawlers have a potato farm back there?
They never potato farmed, but they had cows. They may have. I'm not real sure.
I went out there one time. I was in first grade, and it was in the fall, and Mr. Lawler, he had like 8 boys.
Yeah, 9 kids.
Yeah.
Maureen, Mike, John, Sheila, John, Tim, Tom, Patrick, Ann, and Ellen.
I went to school with Tim.
I went to school with Sheila.
And I just went out there and spent the night once. Just once. And that was
was enough?
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know how they did it. Mom was a public health nurse.
Yeah. Great family.
Joe worked for Golden Valley. He was on the borough assembly with my mom in the 60s. Yeah, great family.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that's how we got to live off Yankovic Road, and they eventually... He partnered with, by then, McGoffin had purchased some land, and Jay Rabinowitz had purchased 5 or 10 acres just north of us, and they pooled their money and built Dalton Trail.
You know, Jim McGoffin was quite young at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, attorney, his dad, Alaska Airways or whatever it was there, and McGoffin.
Interior Airways.
Interior Airways.
Yeah.
But Jim was quite young going into law and found that and bought 160 acres, and now it's... He probably subdivided up about 15 years ago in Alaska Drive and a few things, and he named after a ski slope. He's a big skier.
Right.
Yeah.
Alaska, Sun Valley.
Yeah.
I can't remember the Teton. Yeah, McGoffin Highlands.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So with all the work on Yankovic this summer, though, I mean, all the adventures gone out of getting home.
True.
That must have been in the spring, that must have been a pretty... ferocious trip at times.
Yeah, it kind of was. We were out in the Tules.
Any road rage?
Currently?
No, back then.
Nah.
Flat tires, stuck.
Nah. Everybody had horses. Everybody had horses. I wanted one, and my mom said, absolutely not.
Forget it, kid.
Go over to Wagaman's. No.
Fairbanks, we're going to take a commercial here. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Dalton Highway. And we'll be back after these messages.
More Problem Corner is coming up on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at KFARradio.com.
McKinley Orthopedics Sports Medicine and Spine is officially the number one sports medicine clinic in Fairbanks. The official team doctors for the Fairbanks North Star Borough and the UAF Nanooks, our team of board-certified physicians, are here to treat the entire community. No matter your sport, we will get you back in the game. Concussions, back pain, dislocations, and fractures. We have operative and non-operative physicians standing by. With on-site MRI and surgical services, we can care for all injuries in one location. Open until 8 p.m. Monday through Saturday. Walk-ins welcome. Visit McKinleyOrtho.com.
I'm Bill Walker. There are no easy answers to Alaska's financial challenges. If there were, they would have been solved years ago. That's why former Revenue Commissioner Randy Hoffbeck and I have put real solutions on the table, not talking points, not slogans, a real plan. We've proposed a stable, transparent tax system that gives Alaska a fair return for our resources, a guaranteed resource-based dividend that puts every Alaskan on the same team when our economy grows. A plan to speed permitting, get more oil in the pipeline, which is only at 25% capacity, encourage investment, create good-paying jobs, and balance the budget without a statewide sales or personal income tax. And a commitment to address the energy crisis as the emergency it is, and finally get the gas line across the finish line. None of this is easy, but leading never is. Alaska can't afford on-the-job training. We need leadership with the experience to make tough decisions and the courage to see them through. We're ready to lead on day one. Find our blueprint for a robust Alaska at walkerhoffbeck.com.
Paid for by Walker Hoffbeck for Alaska. PO Box 90153, Anchorage, Alaska 99509.
Living in Alaska is a dream come true. With plenty of stuff to do all summer long. The downside? It's loud. Boating, dirt bikes, ATVs, and sports shooting all can take a toll on your hearing. That's where Fairbanks Hearing and Balance comes in. They have a full selection of hearing protection for your lifestyle. From non-custom electronic plugs to custom molded waterproof plugs, all the way up to the full custom molded electronic masterpieces. To find out more, get a test with Dr. Jackson at the Fairbanks Hearing and Balance Center today, or find out more at FairbanksHearing.com.
Weather brought to you by The Woodway. Care for your lawn and garden with outdoor power equipment by Honda, Husqvarna, Steel, and more. The Alaskan way, the right way, The Woodway.
KFAR weather.
Sunshine mixed with clouds at times. Today, daytime highs approaching 79. Southeasterly winds around 5 miles per hour. Lows around 55. Tonight, partly cloudy. Cloudy tomorrow, 80. Overcast Friday, decreasing clouds by Saturday. Upper 70s Friday, low 80s by Saturday. And that's your weather on KFAR 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Paul Trombley.
And now, more Problem Corner on KFAR Radio 97.5 FM, 660 AM,
and streaming live at KFARradio.com.
Fairbanks, welcome back. I have Nick Nugent and Libby Dalton-Slain in the studio here with me. Now, Libby, there's this little thoroughfare that goes from Fairbanks to Prudhoe Bay called the Dalton Highway. How did that name come into existence?
Well, because my father was well-known from his work on the slope.
I would think so.
A fella named, let me give you the history first. The North Slope Hall Road was built in 1974 to support the Trans-Alaska Pipeline System. Completion was in 1975. So they got with it on that road. In 1979, control of it transferred from Alaska Pipeline to the state of Alaska. And there was talk about, well, when's the public going to get access to that road? And the state was very slow in opening it to the public. They thought it would, I guess, interfere with the heavy trucking and work on the slope. So nothing happened there, but a local legislator named Charlie Parr read about my dad, and especially the public land order number 82 and his pushing to get the North Slope open to resource development and in private hands. He thought that it would be appropriate to name the highway after Jim Dalton instead of the Hickel Highway. Well, it was known as the Hickel Highway for a while, and then the Hall Road. And he put a bill in the legislature, and it got passed, and it officially was named the Dalton Highway in 1981. But it wasn't until 1994 that the public had access. It was fully open to the public. It had been opened in a few small sections north of Fairbanks, but not until 1994 did we have full access to that road all the way to Dead Horse. So it was because of Charlie Parr's legislation in 1981, and the legislature agreed it would be a pretty good tribute to all his work in the North Slope in the Arctic.
So the highway, I remember driving it a couple of times in the early 90s, and I've only been as far north as Wiseman in more recent years, but it is constantly improved. I can remember back in 90 or so, I can understand a bit why the state didn't want just anyone maybe to go driving up it, especially in the middle of the winter.
Right, right. It's an important access and means of transportation for the slope to conduct their business.
So who do you hear more about, your mom or your dad?
Oh, that's not a nice question, David.
I'm not a nice person, Libby.
Well, it has to be my mom because she was just an activist from the moment she got to Fairbanks.
She was a force.
She was a force.
Yeah.
She got her hands
into everything
on something, and she went full board. Yeah. I think one of the things I'm most proud of with her is her involvement with the legislature. It opened up some avenues for her to do some good work in, because she had no retirement from her working days, not one retirement plan from Arctic Contractors. She worked for the News Miner for 10 years. She worked for Ted Stevens for 7 years. No retirement. And she realized she needed some
income.
Income. So she went to work for the state, and she ended up in Juneau in several positions and different positions. Didn't really like the, what do they call, the commissioner. You know, she got put in community and regional affairs, assistant commissioner. Didn't like that. Too ho-hum. Went someplace else. Didn't like that. So she ended up working in Jack Coghill's office when he was lieutenant governor for a while. And one big issue that came up was RS
2477.
It was huge.
Mm-hmm.
And she went to work. She got appointed to work on that committee. I remember Doug Blankenship was in the Attorney General's office here in Fairbanks. Del Ackles was involved, a fella named, I can't remember some of the other people, because I was just a kid or teenager, but they went full force trying to get people to register historic trails,
yeah,
land access.
Even Senator Murkowski, Frank Murkowski, was trying to get people doing it too.
Yep.
It was a big thing. You got to get them registered now.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Get it on the list.
They still talk about RS 2477.
Yep.
So, yeah, and her 10 years with the News Miner, she covered the major events, you know, from the earthquake in 64 to the 67 flood to the native land claims. I mean, there were huge, huge events in the 60s that she covered, and she had the skills to write about it, and it was real journalism.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't biased. It was real, straight, from the mouth news and journalism. And they did a great job back then. Yeah.
That is true.
If she were still there, an editor, it might be more than an 8-page newspaper.
Yeah, it might be. It might be.
Yeah, you know, and the last 2 days, you see all these opinion polls from Anchorage Democrats about Anchorage Democrats.
But I do give kudos to Virginia Farmier for keeping that paper going, because she promised Helen Sneddon she would keep the paper going as long as at all possible. And when you're losing $250,000 a year because of lack of advertising, and you're running
well,
at
yeah,
a loss
but then
year
again,
after year after year. If
their politics hurt their advertising.
Well,
I mean, I've talked to many people who said I stopped advertising with them because of their politics.
Yeah. That might be true. But it's a good time right now with all the political advertisements on. They should be making a profit.
You would hope so. You know, next will be there. They don't go on a Saturday yet now. Next, I think their next adventure will be not producing it on paper. You're online only.
Yeah, she spoke to one of the groups I belong to, and she said when it gets to the point that the online subscriptions outweigh the paper subscriptions, that's when they'll think about going. Yeah. Which,
So, but going back to your mom, she was in Barrow in 1950.
Yep.
Ponder that.
Okay. Here's the deal with that. She discovered knitting because the women that were up there liked to drink gin and play cards and gossip. She was what? 25. She was 25 turning 26 years old in 1950. Well, no, 1950, she was 25. 25 years old. She was not into smoking, drinking, and playing cards. You know?
Yeah.
And so there was
the contractors' wives.
Yeah. Yeah. And gossip, gossip, gossip. And so she made friends with, there was a pioneer radio expert up there, and he had his wife, not full-time, but she came up there a lot. It was Lila Mae Phipps. Lila Mae Phipps. And my mom befriended her. And Lila Mae enjoyed, she was probably in her 60s. And she enjoyed the camaraderie. And she taught her to knit.
Okay.
And my mom knitted. And she knitted and knitted and knitted. She knitted floor-length dresses.
My mom knitted too. And yeah, shawls and things.
Yeah. Sweaters, hats, gloves.
Drops, my mom also sewed. She had a sewing room.
Yep, my mom did too.
Yep.
And then she started trekking over to the native village. She'd catch rides from the point.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how many miles it was, maybe 3, 4, 5 miles. If the wind wasn't blowing, she could walk. If the wind was blowing, she tried to hitch a ride. She'd go to the store. She knew where the little coffee clutches were. She made friends with some of the ladies over there, exchanged, you know, knitting for baleen and their crafts and stuff. And so she made friends over there, but that's how she survived. Yeah, and then she had my brother in 54, so she had her hands full.
It all went downhill from there.
Yeah.
Nick,
well,
what's
up? I know
that
her mother does great sweaters because we were able to, we found one and got it back to you.
Yep. My mom would unravel sweaters and recycle the yarn.
Good for her.
Nick, what are you thinking about for September?
Well, I probably won't be on in September. I don't think I'll have all my materials set up in time.
Okay.
I'm certainly looking at coming back in October because that'll be our 8th or 9th anniversary.
God, it goes by fast.
Yes, it does. But they say time flies when you're having fun.
Or you're in a purple padded room.
Well, there's always that.
You know, I might think they're going to mess with me one day. I'm going to walk in and they're going to change it to gray. Oh, my God, not gray. That would be crazy.
Oh, well, can't imagine.
Yeah, could be worse. Somebody could have found international orange.
You're a horrible person. You're a horrible person. Libby, thank you very much for giving us a great history that you know very well with your family.
Well, you're very welcome, and it's an honor to be here. Love the Alaska history.
Yeah. And Nick, my goodness, you're going to Seattle.
Spokane,
Seattle. It doesn't matter to me.
Yeah, I know.
You're abandoning me. Do you feel good about that?
Not particularly, but it's just that time in life that one thing another.
But we carry on.
We do.
That's right.
And I'm pretty sure that there's so much coming online, so many primary references. I think we'll be able to keep up our monthlies.
Fairbanks, that is our show for today. Be on Friday for half the show. I've got John Tolerud with the Salvation Army. They're doing their school giveaway, and we're going to have him on the phone. And you have a great day. I'll see you on Friday.